Since the show began almost 2 years ago, A Change of Tune has highlighted some of the best up-and-coming artists out of these West Virginia hills, with podcasty chats ranging from Tyler Childers to The World is a Beautiful Place, The Sea, The Seed to Quiet, and beyond. But those interviews have been a bit infrequent, and since West Virginia Day is coming up, not to mention A Change of Tune's second birthday, we thought we'd do something special. 30 days, 30 brand new West Virginia music interviews that range from Morgantown alt rockers to Parkersburg singer-songwriters to West Virginia music venues and regional artist management and beyond, all of which contribute to the state's wild and wonderful music scene. And today, we are chatting with recent Davis and Elkins College graduate, Kaya Cater, a singer-songwriter who traveled from Quebec to West Virginia nearly 4 years ago to learn more about Appalachia's old-time music and culture. We sat down with Kaya in our Charleston studios to talk about her musical journey, her love of old-time and R&B music, and her recent feature from Rolling Stone magazine.
Can't you hear me calling from me? With black and rotten teeth, white roses all around and covered on the. Can't you hear me calling from beneath? With black and frozen feet, white roses all around and covered on the ground.
Kaya, thank you so much for dropping by Charleston to talk about music with me.
Oh man, anytime.
Well, so I guess we'll just start off. I'm doing this interview as part of like a West Virginia music series to talk about music in and around West Virginia. And I should mention that you're not from West Virginia. I mean, you're not even like technically from the U.S. So where are you from originally?
So I'm from Montreal, Quebec. And I grew up there for most of my life, and then I spent a little bit of time in Winnipeg, Manitoba.
Cool.
And I'm currently based in Toronto, Ontario.
Nice. And so I guess you can speak some French, is that right?
Yeah.
Yeah? Yeah. Bonjour.
Bonjour.
Comment allez-vous?
Je vais bien.
Ça va bien. That's all I know.
That's awesome.
I probably know how to say like French cheese or something, but I've been to Quebec before. I went to Old Quebec and been to Montreal and been to Toronto, and I really like Canada. It's a cool place up there. What do you think about it? I mean, you were born and raised there, I assume?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's funny because I had very little appreciation for Canada until I left Canada. And then I was like, wow, things are pretty okay in Canada.
Yeah.
And so I think leaving home was probably the best thing because I now have more of an appreciation for my country.
I mean, that's something that I think all West Virginians have here, too, is that there's a big theme that's popped up in the last year or so here in the state, and that it's a struggle to stay, hashtag struggle to stay. And but when people do leave and they don't stay, then they realize that they do want to come back here. And then that's why we have parents and young adults coming back with like an idea of like, oh, I'm going to settle down because actually West Virginia's not that bad. It's pretty good. So, okay, going back to Canada, though, because we should always go back to Canada. You started there making music. I heard that your family is a musical family, and that's how you kind of got entrenched into this old Appalachian style.
Yeah, actually, my grandpa is a luthier, and he used to build harpsichords and guitars. He cut part of his thumb off in, I think, 2013. He's okay, but I think that sort of cut his career short, but he was retiring anyway. But yeah, and so I think at family gatherings and at Christmases and birthdays, we would always gather around and have like a kitchen party where we just play tunes.
So cute. And
it was always really exciting for me because it was like the one time that I would get to stay up past my bedtime to listen to people sing and play. And yeah, and sometimes I would just fall asleep listening to people singing, and it was just really special for me. And I got into old-time music just kind of in a really odd way. My mom fell in love with bluegrass music when I was like 8. And she was like, okay, we're going to go to a bluegrass festival now. And I just sort of got carried along, towed along. And registration was free if you were under 11.
Oh, sweet.
Yeah. And it was actually Grey Fox Bluegrass Festival in Oak Hill. And they ran this Bluegrass Academy for Kids is what they called it. And
aww.
It was I think, been running for 10 years now, so it's a really successful program. But at the beginning, it was basically like parents could drop off their kids at 9 a.m. and pick them up at 3 p.m. And during that time, you would pick either banjo, bass, fiddle, or mandolin. And you would bring your own instrument, mm-hmm. and all of these kids, like from 8 to 12, would just hang around and learn how to play bluegrass music. And so I tried all of the different instruments. I tried fiddle, I think, and bass. And then I settled on the banjo, and I was determined to be a bluegrass banjo player. And then somehow Old Time just swooped in and like a hawk and picked me up, and I switched to clawhammer. And I think it's just because a lot of the teachers around me at home were clawhammer players.
Yeah.
And they sort of influenced me that way.
And that was at the age of 8-ish that you did, that you decided that you were going to be a professional musician.
Ooh. I don't know. I think that, you know, when you really discover your passion is like when you sort of trudge through your daily activities and chores and classes, and then you at the end of the night you're like, okay, what do I really want to be doing?
Yeah.
And that was playing music for me. And I think I was kind of scared because I'd seen a lot of musicians around me deal with touring. And so I grew up, my mom was the executive director of the Ottawa Folk Festival and the Winnipeg Folk Festival. So a lot of musicians, you know, crashed at our house and hung out. And I think it was a really interesting education for me because I did see sort of the darker side of touring, which is, you know, not being able to see your family, mm-hmm. and, you know, maybe having some folks had, you know, drinking problems, not anything that was overwhelming, but, you know, it's just a different way of life. And I think, yeah. I was a bit apprehensive about that. But there is a way to tour in a healthy way, I think.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, you're right. In some cases, the touring can cause you to have a under-the-surface kind of issue. And then, obviously, over the surface, where it's abundantly clear that you are drunk. But, well, that's good. You got kind of got an experience to what it'd be to, you know, actually pursue this full-time or even part-time since you are a student or you just graduated. Which I guess brings us to that. So you were in Canada for the longest time playing music, getting experience with just, you know, festivals and your family. And then I guess an opportunity came about for you to come down here to West Virginia to perform and learn more about the culture.
Yeah. So I had been going to a lot of Old Time camps. So I went to the Swannanoa Gathering, mm-hmm. outside of Asheville, which is, it's just like a little slice of heaven. You spend a week just playing clawhammer, banjo, and living in this community of people. They're nerding out.
Yeah,
like
music
you are.
Geeks. Yeah, definitely.
You're like, I never want to go back into the outside world. And so I went there twice, and it was really my first introduction to the southern United States, because the furthest I had been was, you know, New York State.
It's pretty southern up there in New York.
Oh, yeah. Totally
Appalachian. Although actually, they would actually pronounce it Appalachian, which is wrong. It's Appalachian.
Appalachian.
It's Appalachian. So, did you, when you were looking into universities, colleges, were you looking into ones that specialized in old time music, Appalachian music, and that's how Davidson Elkins College came into your sight?
I actually really wanted to go to Warren Wilson for the longest time, which is the location of the Swannanoa Gathering.
Oh, interesting. In North Carolina.
Yeah.
Okay.
But it's funny, I remember the exact point where I clicked on their website. I was like, how much is their tuition? And it was like $42,000 a year or something. And I was like, what? Is that even possible?
Yeah.
and so, you know, and I think I took a year off of school, and I didn't expect to be going to school, I think, because I didn't feel like anything interested me enough. And the programs that did interest me, I couldn't really afford. And I was okay with that. I just played a lot of music out in Montreal.
Get you more experience.
Yeah. And I casually applied to the Augusta Heritage Center, which is where D&E is. Mm-hmm. It's held on the campus of D&E. And I got this Facebook message from this guy named Jerry Milnes, who's quite well known.
Yeah.
And at first I thought it was spam. And so I was like, who is this contacting me, offering me, you know, free college tuition to go to a school in Appalachia?
They can't be real. They can't be real.
Yeah, I was like, are they messing with me? Do they know my deepest dream somehow? And so luckily I sort of read through the whole thing, and he gave me his number or something, and I called him. And my family and I went down. It was May long weekend, so it was exactly 4 years ago.
Wow.
And so I checked it out, and I loved it, and they offered me a financial package that made it so I didn't have to pay $42,000 a year. And yeah, and the rest was history.
That's what I've learned, is that if you can just find an education that is more or less paid for, or just you get the scholarships and it makes it worthwhile, you know, you can make the most out of it. But it's that money. It's that debt over your head. If you go to school you really want, but it's like $60,000, you're like, man, was it really worth it? 4 years of that to have this debt just like looming over me whenever I'm walking around town. I'm like, oh, I got to pay off that payment. So, but you don't have that. That's good. So you, 4 years ago, more or less this May, you got the email to join Davidson Elkins and Augusta Heritage Center. What was the curriculum like for you to be here in West Virginia and Elkins? Like what was a normal school day like for you?
It's interesting because I think one of the reasons why I was offered such a generous financial package was because we were really just the guinea pigs for the program. Hmm. And so I was recruited along with Rebecca Wodarski, who's an incredible artist and musician based out of Tucker County. Hmm. She's in Thomas. And Scotty Leach, who's graduating with me this year, who's an incredible fiddle player out of Washington State. So we were all recruited from very different places. And originally, Jerry Milnes was our teacher. And every afternoon, we would have string band class, and we'd get credit for it. And he would teach us mostly different ballads and then old-time tunes. And then he retired after 2 years, and his daughter-in-law, actually, Emily Miller, who's part of the Sweetback Sisters, mm-hmm. She's incredible.
She's very sweet. I like her.
Yeah. She's the best. She became our teacher. And she did a lot of recruiting, actually. So she recruited about three or four other people to the band. And so now, when all is said and told, there's five string band members, and there's about 10 or 11 dancers, mm-hmm. which is the other side of the ensemble. We do music and dance.
That's not at the same time, right? You're not dancing and performing. That's just dancing or performing, right?
Yeah, I haven't figured out how to dance and play. I know Rodney Sutton can do it. He's like the only person in the world I know who can play banjo and clog at the same time.
Like, I can barely dance. And for me to try to pick up an instrument and play while dancing is just a train wreck waiting to happen. That's a lot of great coordination that I do not possess. Well, that's cool. And your new record is actually, it's called Nine Pin. It's, correct me if I'm wrong, but it's named after a dance move. Is that right? Or like a dance formation?
Yeah. So it's named after a particular square dance formation where you have eight people, four couples, and then in the middle you have one person. And so that's what makes it a nine pin.
Okay.
And you dance around. And it's one of the funnest because everybody swings, and then everyone holds hands and dances around the nine pin, and then the caller says something like break or something like that, and basically the nine pin has to try and find a partner, and whoever doesn't find a partner becomes the new nine pin. And so it's almost like musical chairs.
I was about to say that. It's like musical chairs, but with dancing and coordination again.
Exactly. And I just heard it called so often in West Virginia because there's monthly square dances in Elkins. Mm-hmm. And I started doing a lot more songwriting, I think, in my junior year of college. And I was thinking a lot about those formations and probably maybe the deeper symbolism of, you know, being one person surrounded by a lot of people and swirling around you, and I don't know.
In a good way or a bad way? Or it could be both,
both.
I guess. Okay.
Both, I'd say.
These clothes you gave me don't fit right. The belt is loose and the noose is tight. I'm drunk out looking for a fight. I'm soft and heavy as the night. I'm soft and heavy as the night. I've drowned the legs of 30 men, and I've borne the rest.
Was that an interesting experience coming down and not being from the area and having to kind of, I mean, obviously you had some knowledge of Appalachian old time traditions, but coming down and being part of a new community?
Yeah. It was in many ways really beautiful, a really beautiful experience because, you know, I was not even from this country and I had so many people offer to have me over their house for dinner or,
that's sweet.
You know, I don't have a car. And so I had a lot of people being like, do you need me to take you to Kroger or Walmart? There's so many offers.
You probably don't even have a Kroger up there in the north.
And so I was met with a lot of warmth. And I think that made all the difference for me because, you know, there's a certain amount of challenge moving in a new place, a new school, and all of those things.
Yeah, especially if you're balancing student work with your budding music career. I mean, prior to Davis Nelkins, had you released an EP?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, an EP called Old Soul, which I rap on.
Yeah, which I'm going to bring that up. I'm going to bring that up because that's one of the things I really like about just, you know, you, beyond everything else. But yeah, that just must be hard to try to be a young person in a new country, new state, new community, trying to build yourself up and get the resources and knowledge to continue forward. Mm-hmm. That must have been a lot of stress and just a lot of great, but, you know, maybe hard experiences.
Yeah, there was a certain amount of what I call ugly face crying, which is like when you just cry so hard that your entire face turns red and you're like sobbing. And you're, like, snotting all over yourself.
Been there, done that. Yeah, I know that.
So there was a fair amount of that, I think, just from sheer sort of, I don't want to call it a trauma because it wasn't a trauma, but just from the experience of doing that for the first time. You know, I'd always been really close to home my entire life, close to my mom, who I'm super close with. And I think that was a little bit hard. But at the end of the day, I settled into a routine, as you do.
Yeah.
And at the end of the 4 years, I can say that I wouldn't be the same artist. I wouldn't release the same music if I hadn't spent these last 4 years here, you know, because I knew old-time music and I was good at playing tunes, but I don't think I understood the communities behind the music or the stories behind the music. And that takes time. That just takes time.
Yeah. It's like immersion. You know, I guess it's just if you were to go to another country and learn a language, you know, really it's going to be stressful. You're going to freak out. But if you get in there, you learn a bit by bit each day and you just kind of become part of what is there and it makes you a better person for it.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly.
When you came here and after being here for 4 years, did you learn anything about West Virginia or the West Virginia music scene that you'd like to impart upon others?
I think that West Virginians have really good senses of humor. Definitely say that. I think that there's, and I don't want to sound pejorative again, but I think that there's like a quiet resilience in the music and in the songs. West Virginians are tough people, you know, and for many ways, I think probably a lot of it is because of the history of West Virginia. I mean, it was born in conflict, mm-hmm. really. And, you know, a lot of land was exploited and you know, a lot of industry things around that. And I don't know, I just really appreciate people from West Virginia. And I actually feel like there's a strong parallel between West Virginians and people where I'm from, Quebecers. French Quebecers, because Quebec has always been sort of a tumultuous province because there's been sort of tension over language rights and Anglophones, you know, either exploiting Francophone people or that sort of history, maybe the fear of it being eroded or erased. And so a lot of people here reminded me of people from home, and I have a tremendous respect for West Virginians.
What about awesome. Food?
Like what food, was okay. Pepperoni
real talk,
rolls.
Real talk food.
Pepperoni rolls for sure. The best thing ever. But in terms of delicacies here, if you can call them delicacies.
I would.
Delicacies
yeah,
of
I
West
would.
Virginia. ramps.
Yeah.
Ramp season.
Yeah.
I enjoy that. I enjoy ram season.
Did you get pawpaws? Did you try any of the pawpaws?
No.
They're a kind of fruit and seasonal, I think, around the summer. And I think summer, fall. And around here in Charleston, at least, there's a little ice cream parlor called Ellen's Ice Cream on Capitol Street. And they make pawpaw ice cream. And it's delicious. It's kind of, actually, I'm not going to describe it because I'll let you figure it out for yourself. But if there's a way for you to grab pawpaws, and it's the weirdest looking fruit. Weirdest looking fruit. Yeah, so pawpaws would probably be on the list if you like ramps.
Awesome.
They don't taste anything like ramps.
Okay.
But.
Are they like a fruit?
Yeah, I would say so.
I like the sound of that.
Yeah. So, okay. Pawpaws.
Thank you for that lead.
You're welcome. I always like, you know, giving food knowledge because I like eating a lot. Okay, we're going to get back into the music for a sec. So, a few weeks ago, probably around the time that you were finishing up your schoolwork at D&E, Rolling Stone came out with its 10 new country artists you need to know for the month of May. And you and your new release, Nine Pin, were front and center. That must have been a crazy feeling.
It was crazy.
How did you know in advance that they were going to do that? Or was that just you woke up one morning, people were starting tweeting at you, and then you saw, oh, that's my face and my back and my banjo.
Yeah. So the way it happened was that my publicist, Devin Leger, he's awesome. And he works with a lot of trad musicians and Americana and et cetera, et cetera. And he told me, he's like, listen, I pitched your album to Rolling Stone, but I don't know if they're going to pick it up because they must have people flinging albums at them, like,
oh, yeah,
left and right. And then all of a sudden I get this frantic message from him and he's like, I need you to answer these four questions. And he's like, it's for a certain journalist. And I was like, okay. So I answered him and I sent them back to him. And he's like, by the way, that was for Rolling Stone. And I was like, okay, good. Oh, okay, great.
Yeah.
And so we knew that they were going to say something about it. But we didn't know that they would have such kind words about it. And so I just felt totally honored and excited, I think, that more people would be hearing the album.
Yeah. No, I thought it was great. And the, you know, write-up was nice. What's interesting is that sometimes with West Virginia, and I'm going to lump you into the category, but with West Virginia musicians, sometimes they're not acknowledged for being from West Virginia or working in West Virginia recording. But in it, I mean, it's said that you're working at Davis and Elkins, that, you know, you Appalachian music studies. I was like, wow, that's really great, because that's more recognition for the program and for people looking into it because of what was written in Rolling Stone about you.
Yeah, no, definitely, and I work very much at my shows because I do some shows in Canada, and you know, Canada feels so removed from Appalachian. Sometimes people don't have a lot of knowledge about Appalachian, and you know, it's the same thing. I mean, there are stereotypes about Canadians in America.
You mean about?
About Canadians. You know, that whole thing, like, yo, you guys live in igloos, and someone told me that Vancouver was on the East Coast once, and I was like, no, that's not right.
If there's any coast, it'd be the West Coast, but that's not even a West, I mean, it's what, kind of above the West Coast, but not really West Coast, right?
It is, it's pretty West Coast. For Canada, yeah, pretty
West Coast. Yeah.
But, I can't even remember what I was saying.
Oh, Canada, about the stereotypes.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
About the stereotypes, yeah.
So there are a lot of stereotypes about Canada. But in the same way, I mean, when you go up to Canada, there are stereotypes about Appalachia.
Yeah.
And so.
Barefoot, no teeth, maybe.
Yeah, the
one
hillbilly,
of those.
Mm-hmm. The whole thing. That's, yeah. I mean, it's totally stupid and wrong. And but I try to put, you know, work that into my shows. It's like, talk about West Virginia in a way that's, you know, humanizing to people, like talk about people's stories or where a song comes from, and I think not banging them over the head with it, you know, but I really think that, you know, you can't remove West Virginia from the context of the music that I'm playing or that any West Virginian artist is playing.
Now, the one thing about the Rolling Stone piece was that the title of it was 10 New Country Artists You Need to Know, and I'm not sure if I would have thought of your music as country. It's obviously a little bit more bluegrassy, a little bit more old time, I'm Appalachian. After the initial excitement of you thinking, oh my gosh, Rolling Stone, were you kind of shaking your head a little bit like, but country?
Yeah, I definitely was. I thought, okay.
I mean, I'll take it. Yeah, I'll take it.
Yeah.
But
yeah, I don't think I would describe myself as country. though I think if anything, I would describe myself as maybe an Americana artist.
Yeah, agreed.
You know, or
slightly, but still,
yeah,
that's not it.
Yeah, and I remember someone telling me that you just need to let go of that stuff in the press, and it really served me well because I was really hung up on what people were saying, and I'd be like, no, that's wrong. They got that fact wrong. You know, I want them to mention this person or something like that. Like, I want everybody to get credit.
Yeah.
But to a certain extent, it just is what it is. And if you need to be in a category, you need to be in a category. And if it helps someone find my music, then I'll be a country artist.
Yeah. Or if anything, if someone's like, oh, country, and then they listen to your music, and then they realize that they actually like what you make, then that's opening their eyes to a brand new genre that they hadn't experienced before, which is positive, a little weird, but still, at the end of the day, positive. I did like, I think it's still spot on, the Rhiannon Giddens Carolina Chocolate Drops analogy. Was that one that you made yourself, or is that one that Rolling Stone kind of said she sounds like this and this?
That was Rolling Stone, yeah.
Okay.
I believe it was, Rhiannon Giddens and then Gillian Welch.
Yeah.
And, I almost peed my pants when they said it sounded like Gillian Welch. I was like, really? She's my idol. Like,
aww.
If I could have a shrine to Gillian Welch in my house, I probably would, which is a little creepy, but...
But Gillian Welch didn't do a cover of what's the name of the 90s song that the Rhiannon Giddens Caroline Chocolate Drops did?
Oh, Hit 'Em Up Style.
Mm-hmm. She didn't do that. Well, maybe she has. I'm not sure. But Rhiannon Giddens and Caroline Chocolate Drops are known for that one. And I liked how, with that comparison, I'm like, what was the song? Rap in Shady Grove?
Yeah.
When you rapped over like an old style tune and more like talk rapping, like Hamilton style. But that was great. It's just the merger of kind of a youthful sensibility of music, obviously influenced by R&B and old school rap and stuff, but then you bringing it to this mix of Appalachian music, of traditional music, that was really cool.
Thank you.
I liked it.
Thank you. Yeah, that was such a fun thing to do. I just remember just smiling the whole time I was doing it. So that was actually my producer, Chris Bartosz, is a good friend of mine, and we've worked together on my last three albums, so Nine Pin Sorrow Bound and then Old Soul, which Rap and Shady Grove was on.
Mm-hmm.
And he's really great because he just sort of sends me on these writing assignments. And he's like, what if you just wrote a rap about like where you're from? And I was like, oh, I can't do that. And he's like, no, I'll give you a beat. And so I went home with the beat and I just wrote. And I think I remember saying, I was like, but I can't rap. And we were in Toronto at the time, and he's like, well, look at Drake.
Yeah.
You know, I was like, I can't rap. I'm Canadian. I don't know why.
He was on Degrassi, all right? At the end of the day, like, he was an actor in a wheelchair playing Jimmy, and then he became this big old star.
Yeah.
So you can do it too.
Exactly. I mean, Drake just doesn't care. He does what he wants. And I have a tremendous amount of respect for him because he'll sing, he'll rap, like whatever. Mm-hmm. He just makes good music.
He'll dance horribly.
Yeah.
I'm sure you can dance better than he can.
He does dance horribly.
Yeah, it's really bad. you just did it on that one song, Rap in Shady Grove. Are you thinking about maybe doing something again like that for another release or another song? I mean, you could make a full record of you doing that.
Definitely. I think part of the reason why my latest album and my first album, Sorrow Bound, why they've been, I think, more based in old time and bluegrass is because I've been in an environment where that's all I've been studying for the most part. And those influences have come out just because of the space that I've been in. But what I'm excited about, you know, in terms of, you know, parting ways with the school and being more of a solo artist is like that time that I'll be able to spend writing more creatively. And I love R&B.
Yeah,
and
me too.
I love rap, and it's one of my biggest influences. And I think the nice thing is I'll be able to spend more time looking at that in the next year.
Yeah. I mean, you were immersed in this culture, but were you able to listen to more contemporary mainstream music while you were down here studying not that?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Oh, totally.
So you still got to catch up with like 90s TLC or anything along those lines of okay, good.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. My friend Rebecca, who is the first one of the first people in the ensemble, she was playing a festival, and she plays, she has this one-woman show where she plays a kick drum and electric guitar, like badass electric guitar. Am I allowed to say that?
Of course you can say it. It's not live. Don't worry. This is a podcast. We can do whatever we want.
Awesome. and she just murders it. I mean, really. She's just so good. And
is she the one that also taps on this record?
No, that's another awesome dancer. Okay. Her name is Catherine Maynor.
Okay.
We'll talk about her in a sec. But yeah. This little kid, so she was playing this festival stage. This little kid came up to her in West Virginia, and he's like, "Aren't you supposed to be getting back to your roots?" And she looks at him, and she's like, "These are my roots."
Yeah.
And then just, like, keeps playing. So, yeah, I think that even if I was in West Virginia surrounded by a lot of old time, there were also, like, really creative, amazing people around that were just doing other weird and awesome things.
That's good. I should ask, what are your favorite artists, any artists, the ones that you look to for influence on your music?
The Roots are a big one.
I love The Roots. The Seed 2.0 is probably my favorite songs. Cody Chestnut, I'll just break into that sometimes and sing it. So, I love it.
I put my seed in a bush for life. It's gonna work because I'm pushing it right. And then I know my baby girl tonight, I would name her Rock and Roll.
Anyways.
back to business.
Anyways. That was cool.
And Questlove. Love Questlove.
He's legit. Yeah.
He's so good. Yeah. So The Roots, I think, were a long-standing influence in terms of, like, I got into them when I was 12 and I just never stopped listening to them. Lately, Kendrick Lamar's
To Pimp a Butterfly.
Mm-hmm. That really, I think, artistically was just a brilliant album. I've been listening to a lot of Radiohead.
Their new stuff. Have you heard it?
So good.
Yeah.
So good. Beyonce. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So looking back at your work in and around West Virginia, what would you say has been the highlight of your time here?
I think I could probably say, okay, it's a tie. It's a tie.
You can't do that. You have to pick one. That's not allowed.
No. So I was really good on my instrument before I came to West Virginia. Like, I studied a lot and played a lot. But I didn't really know how to sing. I did sing, and I loved to sing, but I'd never had any vocal training. And my teacher, Emily Miller, just really focused on that with me. And I think she could see that I loved to do it and that I wanted to get better at it. And she's just an incredible teacher because you get better without even knowing it. You know, she just fosters this love for singing. And so that was a huge, huge part of my time in West Virginia that I'm so thankful for. And she taught us a lot about vocal styles, how to sing a ballad, you know, and she's completely open to what we wanted to do creatively too, which was awesome. And then the second thing is dance. I did not dance at all before I came to school, and Becky Hill recruited me, and she basically cornered me in the cafeteria. My teacher, she cornered me in the cafeteria, and she said, "So you're gonna sign up for my clogging class, right?" And I said, "My schedule's kind of full." And she was like, "Okay, great. I'll see you Thursday at 4. And I was like, "Okay." And so I bought a pair of, like, cheap tap shoes on the internet, and I started clogging, and I've been doing it ever since. And it's been such a passion of mine.
Clogging. Do you get probably a stupid question. Do you get the clogs that, like, Swedes wear, like the ones that are, like, bright red with, like, the little horses?
Oh, like the wooden clogs?
Uh-huh.
No, so it's just done with tap shoes.
Okay.
But I wish.
Okay. I was like just imagining you with like those kind of shoes. It's not, no, they're not clown shoes. Like they can be very pretty and ornate, but just like you clogging around like those kind of like old school shoes like that. Yeah.
Those shoes need to come back. Like people need to wear them on the regular.
I can imagine them being on New York Fashion Week. Can you like Gigi Hadid or whoever is like the new supermodel of the year, just walking down in those clogs, looking like a fool. Yeah. I can imagine that easily.
Yeah,
so cool. And I'll just be here with like my no heel boots because I can't deal with that. When you were here, were you able to tour around the state and do any and play any venues? Or did you kind of stick to the Elkins area?
Yeah, so we did a lot of shows with the Purple Fiddle. The Purple Fiddle became one of our mainstays and always the funnest shows because the crowd was just so into it and they hoot and holler and it was awesome. We did a lot of shows along the Mountain Music Trail.
Yes.
So we did, we played at Pocahontas County Opera House, which is like beautiful in Marlinton, West Virginia. And I don't even remember us having a bad gig. Once we played in the mall here in Charleston.
When was that?
That was about 2 years ago.
What was it for?
it was actually for this really cool thing, which was that like Romanian school troupe came to D&E to do like an exchange.
Okay.
And so we performed with them. We performed at our school.
Yeah.
And then we came to Charleston and performed in Charleston. And yeah, it was in the middle of the mall, and I think it was probably the oddest location, but we still had it was still a lot of fun.
Yeah.
You know, and it was, I think it was pretty great to see just a different culture performing.
In a mall.
In a mall. Yeah.
Paradise fell and the tenements grew. Swept my soul across the avenue. Paradise fell and the tenements grew. The tenements grew. Paradise fell and the tenements grew. The tenements grew.
So I guess with that, do you have any advice for anyone who is maybe looking into pursuing music in West Virginia?
Go for it. Just go for it. There's nothing, literally nothing bad can come of it. It's not like you're like exploring your love for like automatic weapons or something. Or it's music. It's beautiful. It's healing. You meet people through it. It's a social thing, especially old time. And old time music to me is very, most of the time, very unintimidating. And you can always find people to hang out with. And like I said before to somebody else, you know, classical music, you just have to sit in a room and practice. You know, you have to do scales and scales and scales. And and with old time music, you know, you just find someone and sit down and play fiddle and banjo tunes for an hour. And you've gotten better at your instrument, but you're having fun at the same time.
And then you clog it out. You take out those clogs and you clog that out.
Battle.
You clog battle? Is that a thing? Clog battle?
Yeah.
Did you win? Were you the victor of the clog battles?
I never win. I did clog actually. Battle. My last performance, I did as part of my like clog battle, I did a push up on stage.
In clogs?
I was like clogged and then did a push up. Yeah. It was awesome,
man. That's for someone who like can barely. I can do the girl push up, which I shouldn't say girl push up. I can do the push up that isn't a push up, but that is a you're badass. That's what you are. That's pretty cool. So, is there anything that I didn't mention or a question that I didn't bring up that you'd like to bring up?
No, I think we covered it all. It was really fun talking to you.
Thanks. I guess there's one question I didn't really explicitly ask. But obviously, you are a young woman making music that in a genre that hasn't exactly been full of women, let alone young women doing it. What has that experience been like for you?
Yeah, it's funny that you say that because I recently wrote an essay. Have you seen it?
I did.
So, it's basically how it's. Breaking the Wheel of Silence is the theme. And
was it in the Bluegrass Situation?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, they're great. They're so great over there. They publish it and were really enthusiastic about it. That essay actually, obviously it comes from an experience that I had of just feeling really uncomfortable in a situation in what I say is my workplace. I made a point to say that, you know, anywhere that you're performing music and someone's paying you, it's your workplace, whether it's a pub or whether it's, you know, Mountain Stage. I love Mountain Stage. Mm-hmm. You know, or whether it's a coffee shop. And I think that in the music industry, there's this tacit sort of allowance for abusive people to sort of eke out their weird psychologies on people. And I think especially when you're an independent musician, there's no HR department that you can go to. There's no sort of, you know, thing that you can do. And so that's on the most extreme level, that's sort of the harshness, I think, of being a woman in the music industry, is you really have to stake out your territory, not only with, you know, people that are creepy and weird, but with sometimes even with people that play with you. For example, you know, sometimes I'll play with men, and I had one situation where there's three acts, and I was the last act, I think, and or the second to last act, and they were going to do a finale song at the end. They were going to do Saint Anne's Reel, and the director of the show asked my side player if that tune would be okay instead of asking me. And I don't know if he really meant it that way, if he's like, I'm not going to talk to this woman. But I think that there's sort of an environment where you're not taken as seriously, or subconsciously sometimes people don't realize, especially men don't realize, you know, what their words mean or what their actions mean. And so I think probably just drawing awareness to that and trying to make it just a more equitable environment in general.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm sure as a woman in the working in the music industry, you totally know and have experienced some of these things.
Yeah, I've been lucky. I've had mostly positive experiences, and if there has been a negative one, they tend to be with folks that are older than me, and so they're from a different generation, you know, quote unquote. But I've with my wit and humor, I've been able to kind of remind them that that's not appropriate, that the language they're using, it's quite dated, and that, you know, they also should feel a little bit bad. And if they haven't been reminded of this before, let this be the first reminder and hopefully the last, that that's not how you conduct yourself.
Nice.
And then I hit them. I hit them with my words. No, I'm kidding. I've been there. And obviously, with me, it's interesting is that I've been told, though I've been in this radio gig for about 2 years, and I have been told countless times that I have a voice that is made for porn, or a voice that is sexy in a way that is weird. And each time I've heard that, I've been kind of taken aback, because obviously that is my intention, right? That's exactly why I go to public media, to sound like that. But I always remind them, it's like, that's not the case. That shouldn't be the case. I'm sorry you feel that way. Mm-hmm. But it's that's the weirdest comment I've received. Everything else has been totally positive. And yeah. But on a lighter note, Kaya, thank you so much for stopping in and talking about everything from Beyonce to clogging. This has been a really fun interview. And, you know, all the best. Merci beaucoup.
Vous êtes la bienvenue.
Oui.
Thank you so much for having me on.
Kaya Cater's newest release is 9 Pin, now available for purchase, download, and streaming. You can hear more of her music on A Change of Tune, airing Saturday nights at 10 on West Virginia Public Broadcasting. And for more WV Music chats, make sure to go to wvpublic.org/wvmusic. I'm Joni Deutsch. Thanks for listening.